Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. Every company has a story to tell, from the small startup to the large enterprise, and everything in between. This is one of them. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Marco.
John.
How are you feeling?
I feel like I want to watch a movie, like an old school movie. Might be a spaghetti western.
One that feels good? Or
good, bad, ugly. You know, ugly? I know. Let's see where it goes.
Who are you calling ugly?
You already there?
Not our guest. Hopefully.
Are we already at the duel?
We're already at the duel, yeah. Exactly. We're coming out slinging.
All right. And once again, we're confusing everybody. What the hell are we talking about here?
Yeah.
We're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and how hard it is to define it, especially when we are in the internet.
Exactly. Yeah. Is it a good dog, a bad dog, or an ugly dog?
Or is it a dog?
Or is it a dog at all? Yeah. No, the fact of the matter is we're relying on technology to do a lot for us, and we've found ways to be creative and to get it to do even more for us in the form of bots and botnets. And that can be good, has been good, can also be bad. And of course, Marco, this is a topic we've actually had conversations on, even with our guests in different forms. But you and I still are not experts. So thankfully, we have Edward Roberts here from Imperva to have this conversation with us, to give us a view into what the heck it is we're actually musing around here at the moment. So, Edward, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate being here.
Absolutely. This is going to be a great conversation. And unfortunately, we're not going to talk about the movie. That's something that we're going to let people to go and see. It's a great movie, by the way, you know, because I'm Italian, but, you know, big fan of it. We're talking about bots, and we're talking about a report that Imperva has been doing for 8 years now, and it's just start with that, with bad bot. And Edward, first of all, I would say a little introduction about who you are and what you do, and then let's dive into this bad stuff happening.
Yeah, so I guess my focus at Imperva is as application security, and obviously bots are a part of that. And so coming out with a bad bot report every year gives people an insight into this growing and changing and ever-evolving phenomenon that is automated traffic. So it's interesting. I think historically people understood that DDoS attacks were launched by bots and botnets, but that had a sole goal of just bringing down your website. And so that's the bots that a lot of people understood in the past. But really, bots have evolved to actually being able to do much more specific things rather than just trying to flood the pipe and bring down your site and create denial of service. They're actually programmed to do very specific things to abuse whatever functionality or things that are on your website. So it's interesting to sort of see how that evolves over time. And that's what this report illustrates.
Yeah, fantastic. And so annual report, eight years. I suspect the history of bots goes a little bit beyond that, further back in time. Can you give us an insight into, so you referenced DDoS, and that's probably where most people recognize bots and botnets, but the first bots, when were they, what were they designed to be good initially, or were they always bad?
Well, I think if you think that a bot is basically an automated script doing something, it's probably designed because it's easier for an automation to do something that a human is really bad at. So repeatable tasks, you know, such as checking for something, a bot or an automated script would be way better at that than having a human do it if you wanted to check the price of something or something like that. So you've got historically, the industry that everybody understands where bots became very prevalent and everybody understands as troublesome initially was ticketing for events. you know, whether it's sporting events or concerts. That was the area where people were getting an inability to access tickets because automation had been used there to check the availability of a ticket and deny you as a real human on that site access. So that's probably the one that everybody understands intrinsically from history. But from there, they have morphed into doing so many more business affecting tasks that it's sort of only limited by the human imagination, I guess, as to how they get programmed and what they do. But I think going back to some of the, when you think about the internet, the goal for most people's websites on the internet is to have human traffic, right? If you want a human interacting with your content, like, you know, for you, it's down watching this podcast, for somebody else, it's accessing a news story, for somebody else, it's buying a good, you want a human doing that. The problem is that there's a lot of automated traffic on the internet doing something, and it's on your business for a reason. And so I guess that's maybe the background of where we've got to today. But it's sort of the history of it is really about doing an automated task better than a human could.
When you think about an automated task, it's like, human are lazy and they always find a way to have something else or somebody else doing it for them. But there are also things that they're not humanly possible. Like I'm thinking, like when you started thinking about the search engine like Google and the idea of the spider crawling the web to find all that. I mean, for me, that was already, you know, the first interpretation and understanding maybe for a lot of people about a bot. So my point is, like a lot of things in technology, it can be good, and it can be bad, and the technology stays about the same. So the predominant typology of bots now, it's the bad one. And then we'll go philosophical on that, maybe even the good are bad. But is there an interest, an economic interest, making somebody's money to have all this script running left and right in the web?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, right? That there is this idea of the good bot, and the one that everybody intrinsically understands is the search engine crawlers that go out, scrape your site, index it so that when somebody uses their search engine, your website can be found. So that is a very good service. Every business wants that to be happening, and they would allow that bot because they would classify it as good. And so that is something that is you know, certainly encouraged by businesses. The way that you protect yourself from that is that most businesses, you know where those search engines are coming from. You know the IP space that they're coming from. You know what they're meant to do. You can actually tell them to not go to certain pages by using robots.txt or whatever, things like that. You can actually control their behavior a little bit, and they will obey your requests in order to do that. Whereas the flip side of that is that we've seen a lot of bot operators over the years, when they realized that search engines would be allowed because they'd be perceived as good, they claimed the identity of those search engine bots and said, we're this. But the problem is, if the background of it, like all of the IP coming from the IP space that it comes from and the various profiles and markers and that you know about the actual real good bot, if they're not there, then you know it's somebody who's trying to hide and obscure their identity by claiming to be those search engines. So one of those that's one of those techniques how you allow a good bot and you know, try and look for anything that doesn't actually fit that profile and admit that that's then the bad bot trying to claim that they are a good bot.
And Edward, these examples are scripts and automation external to the organization reaching their site. Are there examples where organizations build their own bots on their site, like chatbots, for example? And then, like, the other examples were companies building bots, so like Google for the web crawler, but then you have individuals, and I can't imagine myself building a bot to buy a ticket. So I don't know how that comes. So I guess my question is it always outside in? Is there inside bots that either are built purposefully or arrive accidentally or even maliciously?
I think a one that you would purposely do internally that kind of logically makes sense to people is you would run a vulnerability scanner to check the code of whatever you put up on the website as good practice to say, do we have any vulnerabilities? So you'd have an external bot, which is a vulnerability scanner, run, and you'd allow it. So that would be another one where you would say it was good if you were running it, but the exact same scanner, if you weren't running it, it would now be classified as bad, right? Because that wasn't authorized by you and you weren't saying it was coming. So there is stuff that you can organize yourself and whitelist and allow to come in. And, you know, there are services that you can actually program that for you. But I think the idea of a good bot is interesting in this year's report is that, because we're living in this pandemic time, you've got good bots that I think people would admit are actually doing a good service. And some of them are about checking for COVID vaccines everywhere. So you could imagine that there are services out there now where they're COVID checkers to see, and they're aggregating all of the places where you can get a vaccine in a state or in a city or in a country and putting it there for people to be able to book a vaccine. That seems like a very good service that you would, a lot of people would get behind. And so that may be another example of what would be classified as a good bot. So it's really about sometimes what it's doing. Is it doing something for good, or is it doing something just for, money-making reasons? Sometimes that's where you get this gray area of, is it really good or bad? And it depends on the lens that you look at it.
Is there any single lens that looks at this stuff to say, this is good, this is bad, this is ethical, this is immoral, this is illegal? I don't know if that makes sense or not, but is it judgment by everybody in the context in the moment based on the situation?
I think that morally, for society, you would sit there and say, in example of a COVID checker, you would say that sounds like a very good idea that somebody's putting together that service, and as a society wide thing, that sounds good. If you're one of the websites that is being scraped and you're being overwhelmed by an amount of bots and real humans aren't able to access that site in order to book their vaccine appointment, then you could see it suddenly become a bad thing for that particular site. And I think that's when it becomes, when the bot is so overwhelming that the volume is too much, that it's denying humans access. And that's the example with, you know, buying tickets for shows where you had that problem. Bots overwhelm it so that humans are denied it. If you have that same thing with vaccines, you could see it suddenly become a bad service. So it's really about the lens you look at. And hopefully that shows the two sides of the argument there, that for the same thing, you could see it very differently, just depending on whether you're one of those businesses being scraped or whether you're a human trying to get a vaccine.
Yeah, let's go there. So for me, the perception is if you do a bad bot, you're kind of cheating the system and you kind of qualify yourself as doing, a criminal activity because you're making it for gain. And usually that's what drives cyber criminals and criminals in general. If you're not making money, why you want to do it? So there are situations where it becomes unsustainable. And I'm wondering, historically, when did it become such a mainstream activity that a lot of people on the bad side of the street decided to go and do it? Where did they see the opportunity and when?
I think the money-making aspect of it is clearly the obvious one. If I can grab hold of items that are limited edition or rare in some regard, and the examples are, as I've already mentioned, tickets for shows. That was when there's a finite number of tickets. And so therefore, if you can arbitrage them and resell them somewhere else for a premium, the business model is there. And that's, that was there before bots were available to do it on websites. That was there standing outside a stadium. The scalper was always there. You could buy and pay a premium for a seat that somebody already had. So that business mechanism is already there. Technology just makes it easier and faster, and you're able to scale it and make a business living on the top of that, at scale. then you have to sit there and go, there are other items that are rare. And the example that this year came out with where everybody felt it was the newest Grinch bot when they released the new PlayStation and Xbox consoles. And then various technology, whether it be CPUs, GPUs, graphics cards, to make your computer faster to play games. When those things were made available, bots were grabbing those from retailers all over the world and hoarding them and reselling them elsewhere. And you had a bot problem in, you know, another space. So these so-called Grinch bots, because it all came out around the holidays and people trying to buy these gifts for their family and friends. And so people were frustrated trying to get that satisfied because somebody had hoarded all the bots, all of those items using bots. So you can see it move somewhere. And if there is an economic, you know, advantage to actually buying something early, buying it at scale and reselling it somewhere, that seems to be where bots play significantly, you know, in the market. The one place where we sort of surmise said, remember when we had the toilet roll, the toilet paper was in short supply at the beginning of COVID? We were sitting there going, are bots going to be trying to grab toilet paper? But I think logistically, hoarding a lot of toilet paper, you need a big warehouse. So I don't think the financial gain from a toilet roll is as much as a gaming console, for example.
Yeah, I know. And I'm having a hard time getting rid of all of that toilet paper now.
The toilet paper monster. That's what it is.
Exactly.
So you alluded to this earlier, and I want to pull on a point that's in the report that nearly half of the traffic on the internet, more than 45%, is bot traffic. And that's a bit shocking to me that there's that much. Maybe I shouldn't be shocked. Maybe that's not enough. Maybe we need more bots. I don't know. But that's a lot of traffic. And you specifically mentioned ISPs and telecoms having those stats. So I'm wondering, what are the signs of the traffic being bot generated? Is it purely the scale at which the traffic is being generated, or are there other things that signify this is from a bot?
I wish there was one answer that would get you the perfect answer there for that. But I think each business has a different bot problem, and that's the challenge here. But I think ultimately, when you're talking about that that 40% number of bots, that's been pretty consistent over the last few years. It's the bad bot percentage has actually risen to its highest number this year. I think it's 25.6% of traffic is actually bad bots, which are these ones that we're classifying as doing something that you haven't authorized and is malicious. But 60% of traffic, if you think that only 60% of the traffic on the internet that we're seeing in this report is human, that's pretty stark number, that because you would want more and more humans than anybody else, because they would be your customers, they would be people that you want interacting with it. So I think that the worrying sign is that this percentage of bad bots is growing. But think about it, it's also in a year where we have had less people going to shows and sporting events. So the ticketing bots have not been as active. So those groups of people were doing other things, and the traffic has still gone up, even though one of those areas where we've typically seen a lot of traffic, bad bot traffic, has gone down just because of the pandemic and the fact that there weren't really tickets for anything to sell. And so I think this seems to be growing. And as all of these use cases seem to change and evolve, this one of gaming consoles and the Grinch bots, you're now seeing even legal sort of action and legislation being enacted in various parts of the world where they're saying, how do we make this kind of behavior illegal in the future? Similar to what we've seen in ticketing. Ticketing is the first one, but now we're seeing it in the general retail space as well, in general, you know, to prevent this kind of Grinch bots behavior. So I think we're seeing that evolution where there is going to be some combination of legislation, the technology used in order to try and control this problem in some way.
So controlling it, obviously, there are certain things you might be able to do on the target end to to protect yourself. And I suspect eventually we'll touch on that as well. But controlling it on the source level assumes you have some idea of the source. And by pure nature of a botnet, I think it's using many people's devices and services, if I'm not mistaken. And then ultimately some master or centralized command and control to organize it all. So I guess my question is, where are these bots and botnets originating from? Can we tell? Are they cyber gangs? Are they nation states? Are they competitors? Are they people like you and me that want the next Air Jordans? where is it all originating from?
I think it's all of those types of people, you know. So there's certainly a lot of traffic that we see originating from the US. They're the bad bot superpower. But that's probably more to do with that's where a lot of cloud services data centers are housed. And also we've seen there is a correlation between the website that is under attack is typically attacked from bots in that country. That's generally you attack from the country that you want to attack in, because it's one of the more primitive blocks is to block a country's IP space. You know, if you don't want to be attacked, if you don't expect any customers or traffic from a certain country, you could just block it, so that therefore you wouldn't even get any bot traffic. So typically people try and evade that kind of simplistic block by attacking from within the IP space of that country. But in terms of how you'd see it, it really depends on probably the features that you have on your website. If you have a login page, I can guarantee you that your login page is getting pounded by bots running all of these stolen credentials that are constantly being made available. And if you've got a pair, bots are just going around seeing, do you have an account? Does this count authenticate? So a login page just alone is a source of bot traffic. If you have prices on your website, you know, of gifts, of goods and products, whatever else you have on your site, there are people scraping that. And that could be competitors who are scraping the prices to see what price you have, and they want to beat you in the marketplace. So, obviously the credential stuff and one I previously mentioned was a criminal group was obviously doing that. You could have competitors doing another group. You could have business partners scraping prices for you because they want to use those prices and resell your goods for you and things like that. So what do you have on your site and what is available really dictates the nature of the bot traffic. One of the ones from many that is quite common in e-commerce is if you have a gift card processing ability on your site, or the ability to check the balance of a gift card, that is rife for people checking, does this number that a bot can just iterate through have a balance on it, and can they steal that balance if they do find a balance on it? So there are many different things. So it's the features on the website, the industry you're in, how competitive it is, whether there's a way to arbitrage and make money from it. It really is. It runs the gamut of who runs these bots and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, people will be people. We're just using technology, right? Social engineering, and it's been existing forever, except that now we do it online. Let's talk about the technology behind that. So even thinking about good or bad, is there been an evolution of the technology used to make the bots more untraceable, unrecognizable? Do they do things now that are unthinkable years ago? Artificial intelligence or machine learning, is that applied to that too, or is more of a more elementary particle?
Yeah, I think we try and classify them as simple, moderate, and sophisticated in terms of the criteria that we evaluate them. And the simple ones are very basic. They're not, some people might classify them as internet junk or something like that. They're just scripts that are running wild on the internet, and they might be hitting you. And they're doing some very basic things, very easy to detect, very easy. They're not trying to hide themselves. They're just hitting, and it runs, could be any type of script that's running. And then you start to get to ones where we call them advanced persistent bots, which is more of the moderate and sophisticated ones, where you actually have behavior that they are trying to evade detection, and they are trying to be more human-like. And that is the difference here, is that they know that there are products, you know, like that Imperver offers that detect this kind of behavior. They're trying to evade detection from products that would identify them. And so that is, and what they might do is they might pause on a website, right? Rather than be a bot that goes through the website really fast, if you can just pause at certain things and make it appear like you're a human, and then before you click to the next page, think behavior like that suddenly might get over, you know, crude rate limits that somebody might put in place. Some of them, they might move their mouse or make a swipe on a screen to make it indicate that there is a real human operating that, but that's really just programmed in, and that movement has to be somewhat random to sort of, so it doesn't look like it's just a computer generated mouse movement. And so there are different levels of behavior. I think how you should think about how you stop this, you put hurdles in the way of the bot, and whichever lowest hurdle stops them, then you're fine, it's stopped. But there is always going to be ones that are getting over the next hurdle and getting over the next hurdle, and you keep having to put these obstacles in their way. Some classic obstacles that people understand that are used to, you know, detect and block are things like captures. So you see those, you know, those letters that come up, and you fill them in. And if somebody, you know, fills that in, they get through. Bots generally, you know, depending on their sophistication, can't get through those. But then there are sophisticated bot operators who run captured solving farms, who run, you know, like you said, machine learning AI to try and get through that. So they're now getting over that hurdle as well. And so all of the hurdles that you put in the way, there's always somebody trying to get over it. But you're only trying to put the hurdle in the way that grabs, that detects as many bots as you can without affecting real humans. There's your balance there about how severe you go on blocking automated traffic, because you want to allow humans through. And that's the part of the technology challenge there.
So as we're talking about this, I'm picturing a bot doing something and there's an impact. But as you're saying these or presenting these last few scenarios, I'm picturing one or more bots as part of a series of activities that may involve human interaction, either bot controllers or end users, and perhaps even things that aren't bots, but just other technologies that are then put together to do bigger things. And so like the gift cards, there's the bot to check the balance and maybe then store that card number. Is it a bot that also tries to use a card, or is it just that information is collected by a bot and then sold off to another gang, and then different technologies are used to actually use that information? So what I'm trying to understand is, are there bad bot organizations that do it all, and or are there services that provide capabilities that others can use to complete their end-to-end nefarious activities?
There's always a human behind it, right? In terms of the technology is being run by somebody trying to gain the advantage. There are interestingly services that are, you know, they classify themselves as business intelligence services, which are, you know, offering the ability to scrape content from, you know, websites within an industry, for example. And so, you know, the airline industry sees, you know, services like that are available. And those would be, if you haven't signed up for one of those services, you could imagine that you're being the victim of them launching services against your site. It's something that would be a problem, right? Because the issue is that someone's using that information gathered by the bot in some way, whether it's to lower their prices, whether it's to deny you access to a product or something. They're using it in some way, whether it's to test a gift card number, whether it's to check if you've got an account on that site. They're using that information, and there's probably a human following up doing something else once they find the information, right? So you can imagine if you you tested 1 million credentials against various sites and found out that 500 of them were, had accounts on these sites. Someone's going to go back in and go, what's inside these accounts? Can I log in? And is there a credit card in there? Can I order things? Can I transfer things? You could imagine once you get in the account, you can do whatever is in there. You could, if it's a bank, if it's a, something with money in it, whether it's, got credits or something like that, you could transfer it to another account maybe. Now you've actually got, how do I monetize what I'm trying to do? That's obviously a very criminal act. But the bot is the first layer of what happens next, and what happens next could be anything. We've even heard of instances where bots are getting into accounts, and then their healthcare or accounts that have prescriptions in them, and then people are fulfilling those prescriptions after it. Now, bot is obviously the first part of it, but there's a human interaction and getting the drugs and reselling those drugs on a black market. And so the bot problem is the front end of the rest of it. And I think that's what people sometimes think of bots as being benign. Whereas you should really think about critically about your business and what you show and what could somebody go after in a malicious way, because someone's probably using automation somewhere to try and take advantage of it.
And this is something that we're going to talk quite a bit more in depth, I think, in our next segment, because it's time to tell people that there is more where this comes from. We're going to have a second episode where I think we're going to go more and look into the future. We're going to look more, Sean, into what the business consequences of these things are. And a little bit more, I think, on the morality. And one observation I'd like to mention here is that, Edward, when you're talking about these traps, I can't stop thinking about all these little bugs that come to your garden, right? But you have your vegetables and you're like, I want to spray everything, but then I'm going to kill the tomatoes too. And that's an example that Sean was making earlier, and it just stuck in my head. So it's like, on one side, you're like, there got to be an easy way to fix this problem. How can we not see that these are bots? And on the other hand, it's like, they're so sophisticated that, Sean, I don't even know if you're a dog or a human.
Exactly. You called me lazy and ugly so far. So I'll wait for the third label. But I think you touched, Edward, on that many people think it's benign. And so who cares? My network is able to handle 50% traffic coming from bots. I don't care, right? But Marco touched on the moral end of it. If you're selling out all your goods, good for you. But if it's going to a bot and that's being used to cause havoc and harm in society, maybe you need to think differently about how you're managing your networks to enable that to happen. So lots to dig into the next one. And we'll look at more of the stats in the report and some options to help identify and detect and remediate some of the challenges associated with this. And as Marco noted, a view into the future. I think we're only just beginning, right? More AI in bots. That's what we
need. Yeah, more philosophical maybe next time. And in any case, there will be resources in the podcast post on ITSP Magazine. We will be sharing this conversation, the link to the reports itself.
So much in the report.
So much there. And then follow us and stay tuned for our next conversation where I'm going to go a little bit more crazy. I like it.
It's time to go crazy. And there is my third label. I'm crazy as well. And with that, Edward.
It's not all about you, you know.
Well, it is in my mind. Edward, thank you so much for the information and insight. Looking forward to the next episode.
Thanks, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and the story made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.